welcome to Live Dharma Sunday for May 5th, 2013. Koyo Kobose here. So glad you joined us. I want to mention that our guest Dharma Glimpser is James Morford of Temperance, Michigan. He was a longtime Chicago Midwest resident. He's a longtime disciple of Reverend Gyome Kobose, my father, who started the Buddhist Temple of Chicago back in 1944. And it was in the early 70s, I believe, that James started coming to the temple. Known him for a long time, and I've heard a lot of, we shared a lot of stories, experiences, and spent time together. But one of the sort of the images that sort of gems, I guess, that stand out when I think of experiences that James had with my father. One was, James said, they went to Japan together on some kind of a trip. Maybe my father was leading a group, and they had visited, they were visiting different temples, going on a tour perhaps. In Japan, the temples often are sort of like in a park atmosphere. The grounds are spacious, and usually they have a separate bell, gazebo-like, big hanging bell. And these are the ones that you may have seen where, and the striker is a log, wooden log that's suspended by ropes, and then you swing back this big log, and you bring it forward, and it hits the bell. It makes a big sound. And so they were visiting the temple, and James sort of started swung this bell, and they were standing in front of the striker and the wooden log. And he maybe moved it back a couple of feet, and it hit the bell. And then James said, then my father said, no, James, here's how you do it. And he said, Reverend Kobose said, grab the log and pull it back, way back, quickly. Maybe 10 feet or so, as far as it would go. And he pulled it back so swiftly that at its furthest backwards backswing, he said that Reverend Kobose was just about, pull off his feet from the ground, and then he brought that thing forward and with all his might and bang into the bell. Boom! I wish I could have seen that. Those are the kind of sharings, I guess, of life experiences that I think have big impact on a disciple who shares experiences with the teacher. And maybe the teacher might not remember the event, but those are the precious gems that we share with other people, not just disciples and teachers. That's a very vertical kind of relationship, but it's with all people and in all situations, that kind of dynamicness, and those are very precious things. Okay, for today, I'm a glimpse, a bird.
Well, I'm happy to be able to participate in the Live Dharma Sunday. My name is Jim Morford, and my wife Linda and I are members of a local group, and I'm called the Multi-Faith Council of Northwest Ohio. I'm going to read a little piece that I wrote, and then I have some comments about the group. In that organization, there's a men's group that formed. It's been going on for 3 or 4 years. Lively discussions are had once a month. We try to hold the group size to 8 to 10. I am usually the only Buddhist participating. That and the low visibility of the religion lets me talk from a different point of view. A recent meeting was particularly interesting to me. The topic, which is usually chosen by the host, was the afterlife. Buddhism, being non-theistic, does not take into account an afterlife. I knew that this would be a fun approach and a question to discuss. We quite often just start around the room and take turns, which is what preceded this night. I basically talked about the present moment. I talked about the importance of being fully aware. I talked about being mindful of oneness of all life and the basic idea of not causing trouble. This needs to include not only the present moment where we live, but also for our future. We live a life where all our actions, as well as our speech and our thoughts, can be said to live forever. That's a big thought to get our minds around. But I think it is basically true. When you think of the way you have respect for your everyday life. Someone in the group asked if I believe in a soul, and I said, we have the no soul system. This was a saying that I heard from my temple. I sort of regretted that and did not follow up a sort of simple-minded saying with much more detail. Specifically, I should have said, I do not really have any proof about this. That is also true of the whole idea of afterlife. Proof is not really the point. Buddhists have no better information than anyone else about these concepts. It is the analysis that lasts. Think about the consequences of actions living forever. You need to do good things and not bad things. That is basically what everyone teaches. I think I can get there with or without hypotheticals. So how do you get the population educated to these ideas? You have to raise the kids in a certain environment. Security and respect have to be available and taught. Recognizing transience and the oneness of life is important. It is probably easier said than done, but that is the way of the Buddhist life. Well, up to now, I've been writing pretty much from my own language, but let me give you a story that I've heard at temple. There was a general that was on his way to battle with an army. He stopped and told the Buddha, "Tell me your teaching in one word." The Buddha said, "Awareness." Okay, so that's my little prepared text for this morning. And you know, thinking about it, it really is very interesting how I have come to think about a Buddhist life. And if you really look at it and start analyzing it, it's kind of like I said in the piece, I'm interested in how you can kind of get to the same place without the hypotheticals. I mean, most of our religious communities bring in things that that the Buddha said are kind of beyond what we actually know. But if you do analyze the things that we do know and the life that we're living, you can really make a case for some pretty good rules and concepts about the way to conduct our lives. So the Multi-Faith Council has given me a lot of opportunities to talk about these things and bring them up in different contexts. And if you're interested, multi-faith is a word that this particular group more or less coined, and has a nice website that the two leaders, the Troutmans, maintain. So you might give a look in the Northwest Ohio, and I actually live in Southeast Michigan, just across the border. So that's my Dharma glimpse for this morning, and I thank you. Bye.
Thank you, James. As I listen to the Dharma glimpse, you know, the topic of afterlife is a very, relevant, powerful topic. It's not only something that everybody has to struggle with, but I think it's a valuable self-introspective topic, because sometimes how we think about those things affects how we live right now. Another kind of attitude would be, I'm not concerned at all about that. That's not, don't know anything about it, and I can't do anything about it, so I put my attention on my present life here. But how we think about that topic can consciously or unconsciously affect our values and how we act, you know, while we're alive. For example, just a simple topic of appreciation. If we live our lives thinking, and most of us do live our lives thinking that we're going to live forever, even though intellectually we know that's not true, we know about the reality of mortality, human mortality, one's own mortality, we don't appreciate the preciousness of what we have been given. It has been said, one of my favorite quotes is, I don't know where it comes from, I'm sure somebody can get the source, but, you know, I'm not a scholar and I'm not particularly interested in accuracy or detailing the reference sources. I remember the meat, which is, the quote was, death is the mother of beauty. This means that, you know, when we see why are flowers put on the altar? We all love flowers. I remember, you know, being around temple funerals, and our forests. Well, flowers are beautiful things. Garden, in the garden and everything, nature. But I remember, I don't know what that beeping sound is. I hope that I didn't do anything wrong. after a funeral, a lot of times, you know, you get a lot of memorial wreaths for the funeral service. They get sent to the temple, and or people might bring flowers to the cemetery, put it on the grave. And I remember one time after a big funeral, the day after, there was a neighborhood person, just a stranger passing by, talking to a friend, and they were noticing on the flowers at the temple, and they knew it was from a, you know, from a funeral service. And the person kind of said, kind of, you know, everyday talk, social conversation, said to the friend, "Man, I don't care about flowers at my funeral. I wish people would send me flowers while I'm still alive." Flowers are beautiful, full of beauty, and it reminds us, has a lot of lessons there. One lesson is that the beauty is impermanent, because these are real flowers, and they will, they're beautiful now, but in the heat of the day and passage of time, they will be wilted and go into the compost pile. So the message here is not that, oh, the beauty doesn't last, what a bummer. No. Impermanence and constant change can enhance the experience in the present moment. Because of the fact that we know it will change and not last, we really look at that flower and we really appreciate its beauty now. That's just what is behind the quote, "Death is the mother of beauty." We appreciate the dynamic flowing of reality, the constant changing of things. We should, when you see sometimes certain couples, particularly older couples, but not only just older ones, but sometimes you see older ones that they had that, whenever they meet and say goodbye, both of those, you know, coming together and then going apart, they have a certain look. They look in each other's eyes, or they kind of grasp each other's hands for a while. You know, they greet each other. They say goodbye to, you know, those moments. Okay. "Oh, so nice to see you." Or, okay, see, you know, they're separating for the day, or maybe, you know, whatever. Because they may not see each other again. Now, I don't think that consciously goes in their mind, but they're so devoted as a couple that they really appreciate being together in that present moment. They don't take it for granted. And this, that's not a small thing when you talk about family, you know, friends or even co-workers. It's almost impossible not to take it for granted that, you know, when you see them every day, okay, well. But in fact, enlightened living, you know, deep spirituality, is those things. Life is lived on different levels, different depths, or different, you know, textures to it. And there's much more awareness about the transiency of things and how to utilize that. Immortality is hidden in transiency. And we get a glimpse into the wisdom that there is no death as such, only one eternal change. It behooves us to delve into self-introspection about our awareness of death and dying. In the Dharma Glimpse, the story of the samurai was mentioned, and "Tell me about Buddhism in one word." He asked the Buddha, and the Buddha said, awareness. Awareness of what? Well, as was also mentioned, the emphasis in Buddhism and Eastern philosophy on the present moment, not on the hereafter or and so forth. Speculating on those things as abstract concepts. The problem never is death. The problem is always how to live. Or you might say, how to live knowing you're going to die. There was another story about a samurai. Samurais are kind of very powerful personalities, and they're, in a sense, kind of arrogant, because samurai was a ruling class. It was said that they could chop off the head of a peasant and with no consequences. They were the lords of the social class system in medieval Japan. I don't know exactly where the priests were, or the merchants. The farmers were on the bottom. Okay, samurai comes to the monk and says to the monk, I guess I'm thought about afterlife, heaven or hell, and I'm going into battle, and I want to sort of resolve this in my mind. So tell me simply, before, I don't have that much time, explain it to me, this heaven and hell stuff. And the monk looked at him, at the samurai who had just come charging in on his horse. And the monk said, I could explain this to you, but I don't think you'd understand. I said, what? Well, a guy like you, I don't think you're capable of understanding even the simplest aspects of this. What? So this samurai jumps off his horse and starts to draw his sword. And then the monk looks at him in the eye and says, the gates of hell are opening right now. And the force of his voice froze that samurai in the mid-sword draw. And that moment was somewhat dramatic and powerful enough that he realized that he received a tremendous teaching from this monk. And then he prostrated himself on the ground in respectful gratitude. And the monk said, and there opened the gates of heaven. Pretty classic story. It emphasizes heaven and hell are states of mind now, right here, this present moment, not places we go to after we die. This is the Buddhist attitude about the afterlife. And of course, this topic could be approached and elaborated upon in many, many ways. I'd like to close with a humorous aspect, which is also related to the fact about we're dealing with things in the present moment, in one's own life, not just, let's have an academic, scholarly, abstract discussion of the afterlife, okay? And, okay, well, before I end on that joke, I thought of another important thing. Just a minute, let me back up. I won't forget the joke. There is, what had helped me was, philosophically, what is the Buddhist position on afterlife? And I read once something that helped me. The Buddha was asked about it, and he said, it was explained that in Buddhism there's two, you could outline two logical positions about the afterlife. Okay. Say you die, and then something lives on forever. This will be that, how the soul brings all that in. This could be called the eternalism one end of the dichotomy. Is there forever? Now, the other opposite extreme would be, after you die, that's it. Yeah, that's it. And this could be called the nihilism position. Nothing afterwards. And it was said that in Buddhism, both of these extremes are rejected. Both the eternalism and the nihilism are rejected. What is the so-called middle way? The middle way is, I don't like that term. It sounds like a someplace in the middle of the two extremes, some kind of a compromise or midpoint. It's not. It's something that encompasses those two extremes, something like an overarching umbrella that is a broader perspective. You backed up. You didn't go in between those two opposites somehow. But that gives you something, an entrance or a gate or a little niche in which to start to probe this big topic of afterlife. Those are not that you don't have to approach it in a dualistic framework. See? It's another way completely of looking at this and experiencing it and living it. You don't have to be forced into, am I going to live forever? Or is that it? I might as well just enjoy myself and be hedonistic and everything because, you only live once and that's it. And once you're dead, you're gone. You're 6 feet under and that's it. I better grab all I can. So that's a challenge for us. We reject both positions. Well, then, what is the Buddhist position? Okay, that's the challenge. And there is one, whether it's called the middle way, contemplative enlightenment, oneness. What does it mean in one's own life is the important thing, not as a solid topic. Okay, I'm going to close with my joke. An old lady was asked, we could say she's a Buddhist lady, older lady, and said, do you believe in that? You're having a big old talk about this kind of stuff. Do you believe in the afterlife? And of course, when you get older, you can't hear too good. But she said, she's got a puzzled look and can't understand. And she said, oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes, I do, because quite often, when I go from one room to another, I ask myself, now, what did I come here after? I hear you groaning and smiling and laughing out there. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, you keep going. And you have a very beautiful Cinco Mayo.